Hey, it's Zach. Thanks for checking out The Low Post. In today's episode, the one and only Howard Beck of Bleacher Report and I pick our Western Conference NBA All-Stars. Please take a minute to subscribe to the show. Rate it. A 5-star rating will make me very happy. And leave a review. Before we get to today's episode, I want to tell you about another great ESPN NBA podcast. Friend of the program, Brian Windhorst and his Hoop Collective gang of misfits. On the latest episode, Windy, Kevin Arnovitz, maybe my most frequent guest ever, and Royce Young discuss landing spots for Andre Drummond. Does anyone want Andre Drummond and Kevin Love, as well as the peculiar handling of Kyrie Irving's shoulder injury? Everything with Kyrie is peculiar. Download and subscribe to Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where I am sadly back from sunny and debaucherous South Beach, Miami, when I was hanging with the heat. But something to make me happy, it's time to say the three most anticipated words in the history of niche NBA podcasting. What up, Beck?
What up? Did you work debauchery into that?
South Beach. I had forgotten how debaucherous South Beach
is. Debaucherous. It was even better form of debauchery. I'm not sure if that's actually in the dictionary, but I'm embracing it. Debaucherous.
I was walking to meet an NBA person for a drink at 9:30 p.m. So not very late. In fact, very early.
I was hoping that was going to end up that sentence was going to end up with a.m. because that would have been even better.
There was and at 9:30 p.m. there was, on my walk, which was two blocks, there was already a three-woman fight spilling out of a club with four dudes trying to break them up, and there was screaming and about, I think it's 9:30. What's going to happen at 12:30?
This was your standard Tuesday night, in other words, in South Beach.
I think it might have actually been Tuesday night. So a couple weeks ago in Toronto, I picked my preliminary Eastern Conference All-Stars with my Toronto friends. I thought I should, for fairness and balance, because if nothing else, I am fair and balanced. I should do the Western Conference All-Stars, and I wanted to do that with you. Are you voting? Are you a voter?
I am a voter, yes.
And we vote for only the starters. I'm also a voter.
Right. And so Zach and I should make this clear, or at least I'll make this clear on my own behalf. You can do it on yours. January 20th, I think, is when we have to file those by.
I have not read the email, Howard. So you are one step ahead of me, responsible NBA All-Star voter. Did the deadline pass? I have no idea.
Mark Broussard will be harassing us both. I think it's January 20th. So it's like still like almost 2 weeks away, which means as far as I'm concerned, still subject to change, willing to still. So whatever I say now, I'm just saying, world, do not hold me to if I change it up for the official one.
No, you're a flip flopper, Beck. You want to be a flip flopper?
I've flip flopped a few times in my day.
Can't be a flip flopper. You're unelectable in this. Oh, I was wonderfully functioning country we have here. You're unelectable.
I'm unelectable on a thousand other counts long before my All-Star voting.
Oh, I would, if you ever ran for office, I'm gonna dig through all the Park Slope Food Co-op records. I'm sure there's some bad. So you bought some bad stuff.
I think the first step is you're supposed to go through my Twitter account and like go into the archives and see like stupid stuff I said in 2008 on Twitter.
That's too easy. I'm going next level. let's do the starters. And the starters, you have to respect positions. You have guard, and three front court players. I am going to assume, because we're both rational people, that there are minimum three spots that are locked in stone, set in stone, no matter what happens in the next 2 weeks. And that's the two guards, which is Luka Doncic and James Harden.
Yes.
And at least one front court player, which is LeBron James.
Yes. So as far as I'm concerned, there are four that are locked. Because I'm locking in Anthony Davis in another front court spot. I'm absolutely fine and comfortable with that.
I also locked in Anthony Davis, and the only reason, well, now he's going to miss a little bit of time, although it's unclear how much after that scary fall last night. We're recording this on a Wednesday afternoon in beautiful New York City. The only knock against him is that the Lakers are -6 per 100 possessions when he's on the floor without LeBron, which is like, you know, he's been so good and is maybe the front runner for defensive player of the year, that I can't, like, that's, for some players, those on-off numbers mean something, and it does mean something that the Lakers' offense isn't functioning without LeBron, but the sample size for anything halfway through the season is still pretty small, and, like, the supporting cast is kind of meh. He's in. I agree with you. Those four are in.
Those four are locks, and we should, a quick nod to Steph Curry. None of us want to see him sidelined, but he made our decisions and everybody's decisions, I think, easier in this case, where it was Curry and Harden were just locks for years on end, and now this year it's Luka and Harden, and it's easy for us to say that because there's no Curry to consider, so we don't have to worry about, is Luka going to be classified also as a forward? Can we sneak him in there? You know what I mean?
I have not looked at the official ballot.
I have not
if
either.
If he's classified as a forward, I'm going to place some angry calls to the NBA because he shouldn't be. By the way, quick aside,
you want to be angry? Oh. Do you know where I found Luka listed as a forward? On ESPN.com, as David Stern once put it.
He should just be listed as Luka. Like he's just, yes. It's just like Ben Simmons.
He's
like,
got his own drop-down menu. Guards, forwards, Lukas.
Luka. You're just a Luka. And, so I haven't even looked at the ballot. I assume he's going to be eligible at guard.
I would assume.
So that leaves one front court spot open. I am debating between two players. Is your debate larger than two players, or is it only two players? I'm debating only two. That's it. There are two candidates. That's it.
I'm gonna insert a reference here that I have not before because I just now binged enough of this. But you had the writers on recently for The Good Place.
Yes,
I've put aside that episode of The Low Post to listen to once I'm completely caught up because I didn't want any spoilers.
It's a big spoiler show.
Okay, and we're close. We've been whittling away at it. Incredible freaking show. I love that forking show.
Have you ever actually whittled? I don't think you've whittled. I don't think you could whittle. I think if I gave you a piece of wood, you could not whittle it. I couldn't.
All right. So I have whittled. I'll have you know. When I was a kid, I had a little pocket knife and I would bring it to like camp.
What are you on the Little Rascals growing up? Like what the, a pocket knife and you're whittling?
A pocket knife, a slingshot, you know. I've whittled. Whittled wood. I whittled soap.
Good Place. What's the point of you bringing this up?
Because I've realized I have way too much in common with Chidi. It's too much nuance, too much paralysis, of decision making. And so I have.
I'm already cringing on your behalf right now.
I had four guys that I considered.
What an embarrassment.
for the third and final forward spot.
Front court.
For the front court spot, excuse me. F is for front court. Kawhi would be the obvious one, except Kawhi Leonard has missed, as we record this, like 27% of their games or something, and that bothers me. And it's not because this is not a load management rant.
Yeah, you said that bothers me like you were about to yell at the clouds. Like you were about to open up your screen door and yell at those children.
All right, it troubles me. It doesn't bother me. It troubles me. We have always had this exercise, right? When we talk MVP, when we talk Embiid for Rookie of the Year, Rachel, you're still wrong. Any of those.
Wow. Just calling out Rachel Nichols, who's not even here to defend herself.
She knows. We have this debate every time. Availability is important, especially for MVP, but even for All-Star. If you've missed a quarter of your team's games, it's tough. Now, that doesn't mean it's disqualifying for Kawhi as a reserve, but for the purposes of this discussion, I decided not to make Kawhi the third front court player because he's missed too much. And that's not an anti-load management thing either. It's even if
he's
not injured.
Remember, he's not out for load management. They clarified this, Howard.
I know.
He's out for an injury. It's not load management. When you see load management, that means rest. He's not managing the old load. He's resting.
And what I'm saying, Zach, is I don't care if he's resting, load managing, injury managing, managing whatever.
Okay, give me your sad list of three other candidates.
The other ones who I thought were at least worthy of consideration, Nikola Jokic, Rudy Gobert, and Brandon Ingram.
I respect your Brandon Ingram choice because when I was looking through who should be a candidate for the last front court spot, I gave him a perusal. He's had a really nice season. Ironically, he is not going to make my full All-Star roster, despite the fact that I gave him a perusal. I think it's very close. We'll get to it.
All right.
There are only two candidates for this spot. Okay. Apologies to Brandon Ingram. And who was the other person you brought up?
Gobert and Jokic.
Rudy's had a nice season. It's Jokic or Kawhi. That's it. These other guys are fine. It's Jokic or Kawhi. And it's actually a fascinating contrast because you have the one guy who has played – well, let's put it this way. Jokic got off to a slow start. And had everyone, me included, being like, he doesn't look great. He looks like he had a nice time in Serbia over the summer.
No doubt. Or somewhere.
Sipping a lot of rakia. You don't even know what rakia is. You don't want to know what rakia is.
I think I included that drink in my story about Jokic a couple years ago. So I've typed that word.
Don't drink it. definitely do not buy it from an old person selling it out of a used Sprite bottle on the side of a street in anywhere in the former Yugoslavia. You will die. So he got off to a slow start. And by the way, there, I saw some media commentary about, you know, it's only the media people that were worried about Jokic and he's going to play himself into shape. And even my commentary was like, you know, he's probably having experienced a long playoff run, realizes like, this is really a long game. He's going to play himself into shape. It'll probably be fine. If you don't think the Nuggets were worried about it, you are kidding yourself. The Nuggets were also like, ooh, this is, doesn't look great. I hope it's all going to be all right. It probably will be. So you have the slow start guy, but he's played 250 minutes more than the guy who got off to a blazing start and has been more or less blazing with some troughs here and there all year than Mr. Load Management, Kawhi. So it's actually quite an interesting contrast. Kawhi is averaging 25 points, I think 8 rebounds, 5 assists a game. I might have those numbers reversed. 45% shooting, 35% from deep. The Clippers are plus 12 with him on the floor and about even with him off the floor. So a huge, huge gap. And without Paul George there, when it's Kawhi only and Paul George is off the floor, they're like plus 13. So and the reverse of those minutes have been shaky. So Kawhi has clearly been the best player, the most important player on a very good team. Jokic is averaging 19, 10 boards, almost 7 assists a game. That's a wow. Like his assists are down too. Like, and he's at 6.5. He's now up after a hot streak, including a 47-point game the other night. 51%, 31% from three, 58% on twos. The Nuggets on off numbers are about the same with him, i.e. plus a lot. And the advanced numbers mostly favor Jokic. Mostly favor Jokic, whether you want to do your vorps or your porps or your bipums or your schnippums or your pipums or your purrs or your ripums or your shares of various things.
I might not want to do any of those things.
Well, I checked them all.
Some of those things sound a little risky.
I checked them all.
Some of those things you need a shot for afterward.
And they lean Jokic. So right now, again, I don't have to make my final decision to whenever you said the deadline was, and hopefully you're right, because I'm now counting on you.
January 20th, I think.
I'm right now leaning Jokic over Kawhi. Right. But it's 55-45. The other guys, come on, get serious. Those guys aren't better than these other two dudes.
So, couple things here. I think Jokic's slow start and the apparent visual evidence, among other things, that he was out of shape, I'm not going to dismiss entirely. I think those things matter a little bit. Clearly rallying, clearly playing pretty well. Nuggets are good. I can't really say there's anything wrong there, and I know like harping on his defense is just kind of pointless.
Can we talk about his defense?
Yeah, let's do that.
For whatever consecutive season now.
Be nice if I could get my wife, I'd actually.
Well, you can't, so just deal with it. Yeah. Beck, fly blind for a second. The Nuggets are better defensively with him on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their starting lineup has a few strong defenders. Gary Harris has been really good at the expense of his offense, which has fallen off a cliff. I have no idea what happened to Gary Harris. Millsap is a stud, you know, but it's not like it's monstrously good. However, it's a very interesting defensive profile, and it's a very interesting, particularly in contrast to another guy who will come up, I assume, in this discussion, and that's Karl Anthony Towns. Jokic is allowing 70% shooting at the rim when he's the closest defender, which is about as bad as it gets in the NBA. However, teams get to the rim there much, 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 much less rarely with him on the floor. Now, is that his teammates? Is that him? Is that his positioning? Is his hands? I don't know. It's probably some of all those things. And part of the reason why the Nuggets are so much better on defense when he's on the floor is that opponents are shooting some hideous percentage on threes, and especially hideous percentage on corner threes. Is that luck? Is that great team defense by his perimeter guys? Does he have anything to do with that? How are we to credit and not credit him for what's happening on defense when he's on the floor, which is that the Nuggets are not giving up very many points? Taken as a whole, there are definitely matchups that are going to be problematic for him. But I think it's getting harder and harder to argue that he's this massive defensive liability. It's just not showing up anywhere right in the numbers. In fact, the numbers all point you to the opposite direction, to the point that you're like, well, the eye test says this and the numbers say this and they're dramatically different. It's a very interesting thing.
I view him as not necessarily a net negative, and I don't even bring up his defense because I think he's a negative. I think he's just not necessarily a net positive. And so it's one of those things where his case for All-Star is built entirely on his offense, which is fine. because this game is about offense, and he is the offensive engine of that team.
One thing to keep in mind, though, part of defense is rebounding, and he is one of the best rebounders in the league.
For sure. Although, have you listened to or seen – so I think it's Ben Taylor, right, who does the
– Smart Basketball.
Yeah. I just listened to his entire presentation on rebounding and whether rebounding as a category, especially in this age, is overly valued as a box score number. It was fascinating. I encourage people to go find that on whatever podcast platform and listen to it. And it's really interesting, too, when you start thinking about, you know, Dennis Rodman's Hall of Fame, you know, not candidacy, but he's obviously in, and Ben Wallace's outstanding campaign for Hall of Fame. Will he make it? And if he does, his rebounding is a large part of his resume. But it's interesting to think about whether we overvalue rebounds by a single person, not as a whole for a team, but whether a single person's rebounding is really as valuable as those raw numbers would suggest. Anyway,
well, I think, but that's
discussion for another day, probably.
But it's also, like, we know that there are some guys who are like the Lopez twins. Are really good rebounders, even though they don't get a lot of rebounds, because they'll box out everybody.
Exactly.
And allow their teammates to
get
rebounds.
And that's a piece of this.
So when you evaluate rebounding, you should know by now that you have to evaluate everything. You have to watch the game to see what kind of rebounds is this guy getting. How many of them are just totally uncontested? Anybody could get them. He's DeAndre Jordan literally taking his teammates' heads off to get a defensive rebound. What kind of box out guy is he? Does he box out at all? Is he a pogo stick rebounder? That's what I call the guys who don't box out. And so if you're smart, you can just sort of get around them because they just jump for rebounds. It's all of that. But Jokic, to me, passes the eye test on every level as an elite rebounder. And if anything, I think his passing is actually undervalued. I think his passing is one of the most powerful engines of offense on an individual level in the last 20 years in the NBA.
And his assists are slightly down, right?
Down, little bit down. His passing is that generationally good.
Yeah.
Particularly when you look at his teammates and you think, well, who of these guys is creating shots on their own without this big dude unleashing everybody?
So all fair, and I don't dispute it. So for the purposes of discussion, and I want to make this very clear, like put a big-ass asterisk that says for purposes of discussion, because one, my ballot may change as we've established, and two, I'm using this opportunity to simply make a statement. So here's my statement. I put in Rudy Gobert.
Whoa!
No, I mean, listen, it's not in stone. It's not, it's not etched. It's not laser carved. It's just for the purposes of this discussion. And it's on my 8.5 by 11-ish piece of paper here. He's not in all caps the way I have some other guys. Here's my purposes of discussion for Rudy Gobert. I did this in part because I want there to be a discussion. In his first six seasons, this is year seven. So six seasons. Two-time All-NBA, three-time All-Defense, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, and zero All-Star appearances. Now, this is a big point of contention, obviously, as you know, in Salt Lake City. Probably.
I've never known Jazz fans to feel aggrieved about anything.
Yeah, a little bit. Sometimes. Feel a little overlooked, maybe.
I like the Jazz fans. I do like Jazz fans.
They're great. Actually. No, very passionate fan base. And I don't blame them for being perennially disappointed and maybe even a little bit peeved on Rudy's behalf. Again, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, three-time All-Defense, two-time... How can you be two-time All-NBA and not an All-Star? Well, it's very simple. The NBA, in a mistake they have yet to correct, took centers off the All-Star ballot, but still have centers on the All-NBA ballot. It's inconsistent. Go all one way or go all the other, but don't keep doing this thing where they're...
I disagree with you.
Oh, this is horseshit.
I don't think that's a mistake. I like anything that encourages you to just discard the positional labels and pick the best players. I want total flexibility to pick
that's
the best players.
All right, okay. And if that's the case, then an All-NBA should just be like pick 15 guys.
That's fine.
Okay, but we're inconsistent. I don't like inconsistency. Inconsistency bothers me.
So what I would say the problem is the coach has made stupid choices. It's not the system's fault.
And there's that.
It's the coach's fault.
Thank you for teeing up this particular rant, because every coach in the league is going to talk about what a great defender Rudy Gobert is and how important defense is. They're also going to talk about how important winning is. Like every time Jeff Van Gundy does your pod or anything else, if he talks about MVP, all rookie, he's always talking about, I want winners. Coaches always talk this way. And when it comes time for coaches to actually use their voting power for something like All-Star reserves, Rudy Gobert gets overlooked.
No, I haven't. I believe he has made my last two. You know, I write my column picking my full all-star rosters every year. I believe he's made my last two. And I don't remember if it was last year or the year before. I think it was last year when the Jazz people I knew were worried he was going to. They were curious whether he was going to make my team because I think they were looking for any piece of evidence they could to show the coaches, like, you got to vote for this guy. They were worried. I think it was last year I was like, guys, there's no way he's missing the All-Star team this year. It would be a joke. Like, I looked at all the candidates. I was like, it's so obvious. And it was last year was the year that he kind of had the emotional response, right?
Yes.
And Draymond made
yes.
fun of him and all of this.
Yeah.
I think it was last year then because I was – rarely am I shocked by an All-Star decision that maybe leans toward pedigree or scoring at the expense of defense. But last year I was legitimately like, oh, my God, they left him off again. You know, so what you're saying really politely is that you've made him a pity starter.
No, I'm using this as a means to smack a couple people over the head. One, the NBA for taking center off of the ballot. Because listen, at the time they did it, we were in a really bad place with centers in this league and it was getting very iffy about whether or not centers were going to make the All-Star team over much more deserving forwards. And look, there's a lot more sexy picks at the forward spot every year, right? But center has become a lot sexier than it was, whatever it was, 7 years ago when they did this. You've got Jokic and Gobert and Embiid and, you know, Vucevic, Bam Adebayo, whoever. Like, I know, like, not all these names are as sexy as some of the others, but Andre Drummond, Capella. Like, there's a lot
of... Now you're getting into...
Jared Allen, Mitchell Robinson.
But I like Mitchell
Robinson. The center position has evolved in all kinds of interesting ways. And while we will never go back to the days of, you know, Shaq and Ewing and Hakeem, I just don't think it wasn't justified then, and it's certainly not justified to keep it now. And if you are going to keep it now as just forward, as a front court and not having center specific, then just do it all the way, do the All-NBA ballots. The only reason Gobert has been All-NBA but not All-Star is because of that. It is because he's not popular enough to get the fan vote and because the coaches don't care enough to insert a center. If center were still part of the ballot, Gobert would have made it by now.
I haven't looked at the actual returns. Does Caruso have more votes than Gobert? Does Taco Fall have more votes than Gobert?
I'd love to.
People get so angry about this every year, whether it's Pachulia.
I know, my mentions on Twitter.
It's the best. I love people get so angry.
So
they're not going to make it. They're like Zaza got a little iffy with Zaza, but they changed the format. I don't know what percentage of this counts, but the fan vote is not everything anymore to determine the starters. Obviously, we are voting. We have some percentage of it. So they're not going to make it. Alex Caruso is not going to get voted in as a starter to the All-Star game. Okay. It's like, just don't worry about it. It's fine.
Alex Caruso, to your question, has 92,000 plus votes through the first returns. The second returns are about to come out. They'll come out tomorrow.
Ooh, I'm excited.
I'm so excited. Rudy Gobert does not appear in the top 10 vote getters in the front court, so he does in fact by
definition. So we're all these Jazz fans. We're all the Jazz fans who are aggrieved about everything.
Not a heavily populated state.
Who think that everyone is against them, who are so loud on Twitter. Well, get the vote out. Get the vote out. Are you like the lazy young people who are like, I can't be bothered to vote. It doesn't change anything.
I think there are more people in Santa Monica alone than there are in the entire state of Utah.
All you gotta do is tweet. Tweet, hashtag,
oh,
Rudy
true.
Gobert,
yeah,
Rudy Gobert,
still.
Rudy Gobert. That's it.
Oh, that's right. You can ballot stuff.
Yeah.
Right, they're just, you know what? I think this is the lesson of today. Jazz fans are not working hard enough. Zach said it. Anyway, that's where I'm at. I think Rudy Gobert is deserving. He's overdue. And because we have the luxury in this particular exercise of not, like, I can put Gobert there and still put Kawhi Leonard and Jokic in my reserves because we're doing all 12, I'm going to use that opportunity to cheat a little bit. Again, I don't know if Gobert is going to make it when I actually file my real ballot for whatever that's worth.
He should not start over Jokic or Kawhi. I'm going to hammer that.
That's my
podcast. Listen, I'm going to make it a final declaration that you are incorrect and he should not start over.
And I'll acknowledge one other thing while we're on the subject. For the most part, the All-Star game, of course, is for entertainment purposes. And if there's a bias against defensive first players, it's because fans, of course, want to see the guys who excite them. And it's more exciting to watch, say, Kawhi Leonard or even Jokic's passing than it is to watch Rudy anchor an elite defense. I'm sorry.
See, I like when there's one out of place guy who's like, like, oh, we're in shell pick and roll coverage. I'm in drop coverage. I got to protect the rim. And everyone's like, dude, what are you doing? I'm just trying to throw an alley-oop. I like when Kyle Korver was running around pin down screens. Like, yeah, I'm open. Like, what's going on? Give me the ball.
How about when they were all getting pissed off at Giannis? Was that last year where they were, or 2 years ago when they were like the veterans were like pissed because Giannis was actually trying to play defense and was actually like working hard out there?
I like when there's one out of place guy. If it's Giannis, so be it. So right now I'm doing Luka, Harden, LeBron, Davis, Jokic, slight lead over Kawhi, but I'm not sure about that. You'll note that there are two Lakers in the starting five, which brings me to something I wanted to discuss today.
I'm just shocked you don't have three Lakers in the starting
five. Well, there was an article. I mean, Kyle Kuzma's a nice player. He's a nice player. I think between his first and his second year, he made a real commitment to, I'm going to try to grind out on defense a little bit. And by the way, when you have LeBron on your team, there are some nights you have to guard LaMarcus Aldridge, and there are some nights if you're Kyle Kuzma, you have to guard Klay Thompson. LeBron is not going to guard the most arduous assignment. You are, because you're a tweener, and that is your curse.
And because you're younger.
And he dialed in, and he did it. I think he has some off the bounce juice that is interesting. He can post up smaller guys. His shooting hasn't been all it's cracked up to be, but he's a fairly well-rounded offensive player. He is covered in the media as if he is an all-star. There was an article saying about Kyle Kuzma trade destinations saying, what's up with the Lakers star? It's like, star? If Kyle Kuzma is a star, what is Chris Middleton? A Hall of Famer? Is Devin Booker the greatest player of all? Can we just dial it back a sec? And it seems frivolous, but this is what drives fans of the other teams crazy. Is that Kyle Kuzma is covered like a star, and Chris Middleton or Eric Bledsoe or I pick another guy. I don't know who's Devontae Graham is not covered at all.
Yeah.
And Kyle Kuzma is labeled a star. It's like, no, he's. And then it's like, well, the Kings might have to offer Bogdan Bogdanovic and some other stuff just to get the Lakers interested. Bogdan Bogdanovic is better than Kyle Kuzma by himself?
Yes.
That's it?
Yes.
Like, of course the Kings aren't offering more than that. That would be stupid. Even the Kings aren't going to do that.
That was the most bizarre series of speculative
events. And, like, I don't mean to trash Kyle Kuzma because I think he's a nice player and a useful player. And as I said when I had Simmons on my podcast in LA a few weeks ago, I think trade talks with him have been inevitable since the moment Davis got there because his fit with LeBron and AD, especially if they're going to play these centers 35 minutes a game and the centers are playing well, it's just a weird, awkward fit. He has a nice skill set. It's not the perfect one for that team. He is the natural trade engine to get that perfect skill set for their team. It's not surprising he's being traded, but the coverage of it is like – And if I'm a fan of another team, if I'm a fan of a small market team, this is why the Raptors fans and the Jazz fans are all up in arms about how this is covered because it's like, it's totally disproportionate to his standing in the league.
It's this Laker halo effect, right? Like it's this extra, bonus points you get just for doing whatever it is you do, but for the Lakers. Cause if you did all those same things for the Pacers or the Grizzlies or the Jazz or somewhere else, nobody would be hyperventilating about Kyle Kuzma in the same way. It's a Laker thing.
Like the Grizzlies could be like, we're making Jaren Jackson Jr. available, and there would be like, oh, we interested?
what else are you going to give us for Kyle Kuzma? Maybe. Jaren Jackson Jr. and what?
And Jaren Jackson Jr. is awesome.
And he's awesome.
And he's an awesome young player. Anyway, that's the end of my Kuzma thing. He's a very nice player. I like watching him play basketball.
This is our fault, though. We are the media.
I know. He can help a good team. It's just like, can we just dial it back a little bit? Okay, so then now we have seven reserves.
Yeah.
And I believe the league in the last couple of years has given the coaches almost total flexibility with regard to positions and picking the seven reserves. I don't think you have to do the two guards, three front court players, two wild cards.
I thought you did.
They told me last year that you don't really have to anymore.
I did it that way. I don't know if it would have turned out differently otherwise. Maybe not.
So I'm going to say that there are three stone cold, write them in pen locks of the seven reserves.
I did five locks.
Well, I'm glad you were more decisive about this. because you have both Jokic and Kawhi as reserves. I have one. My three locks are whichever one of those is not starting.
Mm-hmm.
Paul George
mm-hmm.
and Damian Lillard.
Yes.
That leaves me four spots for – I probably whittled it down to seven or eight I think, realistic candidates. But to me, the only locks, like I have Gobert on my team to preempt the outrage.
It was coming.
I have him on my team, but I only had those three guys were a tier above the rest. The Jokic, Kawhi leftover, Paul George, and Damian Lillard. Your locks are Lillard, Paul George, both Jokic and Kawhi, and you have a fifth lock. Please tell me who the fifth lock is.
The previously mentioned Brandon Ingram.
Wow.
I think he's been that good. The guy's been incredibly impressive. And I'm not, listen, if it were at the expense of somebody that I thought absolutely had to make it, then that'd be one thing. But I just think he's been that good. And it's not going to be, I don't think, at the expense of anybody that I feel like.
Well, to your point about the Warriors early, by Western Conference standards, this is a weak field without all four Warrior stars.
Right. Exactly.
This is the weakest Western Conference
field
in a long time.
For how many years did we have, you know, for 3 years, of course, at a minimum, Steph, Clay, and KD, and Draymond was essentially is a lock too. So there were four of them. Out of a field of
Cousins
12.
Is gone. I mean, you can go on and on.
So it did open it up quite a bit. But I mean, just quickly, in case anybody has not been paying attention, Brandon Ingram is averaging right now, and I know they're not winning, but I'll get to that point in a minute if you want to talk about whether wins matter.
Yeah, I thought you were Mr. I Care About Winning.
No, coaches are, and I'm trying to hold them to their own damn standard. Brandon Ingram is averaging 25 points, 6.8 rebounds, 3.8 assists. All those are career highs. Effective field goal percentage of 544, including a 3-point percentage over 40, 0.404. I think he's been awesome, and he has taken on – it's not just the fact that he's got numbers. It's the fact that in the absence of any obvious go-to guy, because Zion is not there and playing yet, and because there is no obvious franchise anchor in the absence of Anthony Davis – Brandon Ingram is not just showing that some growth over the, you know, in year four. He's showing that he can actually be the featured player, which I think is tougher. It's the same thing I say about Siakam, where the jump from, that he made a year ago was really impressive. And this jump is almost more impressive because while statistically it may be more incremental, it's also as the lead guy with nobody else to kind of be playing off of or have shield you from spotlight, responsibility, defensive focus, whatever. And so that Ingram is doing this on a team that is just still trying to figure out who they are and find their way with all these new pieces and their supposed new franchise star, Zion, on the shelf all this time. I'm just really impressed with what Ingram has done. He looks really polished and steady out there. I think he's deserving.
Do you think Zion, what if Zion secretly has bursitis in one of his shoulders? Can we talk about that for a second?
Absolutely.
What in the hell is going on?
Oh my God.
So this is the Nets.
Right.
Here are the Nets. Welcome to being relevant in the NBA.
Yeah, this is
welcome to the big stage. I was watching the highlights of their loss to the Thunder. I'm like, and it's Brooklyn and the arena looks, you know, like decently full. You ever wonder if KD and Kyrie look at each other like, yo, we signed with the Nets. Like the Nets. Like we didn't sign with the Knicks. We signed with the Nets. Are we sure? It'll be good next year, right? Like we'll be good. But to the Nets,
the crowd will be better once those guys are both playing. Right? I'm certain of that much. I'm certain that building will be full and energized when they're both playing. I think I'm certain.
I don't know what happened. I haven't been on top of the. I have not been beating the bushes on the Kyrie injury saga. Because there are only so many things that I can give my care to in the NBA on a day-to-day basis, and I decided other people are going to care a lot about this. So I'll let them care about it. I'm not going to call the GM and the coaches and try to figure out what's going on. And also, they won't tell me what's going on anyway, which is clearly what happened in this case because they straight up asked Kenny Atkinson, hey, I heard he has bursitis in his shoulder, and Kenny Atkinson said, no, he doesn't have bursitis. I don't know where you're getting from. And then he did have bursitis in his shoulder. I don't know how bursitis works. Maybe you can get bursitis and suddenly when you didn't have bursitis before, and I don't even know what an impingement is, and I haven't dove into it. But I think it's pretty clear that the Nets for a long time were like, you know what? Let's just skate right on by on this. Let's just not say anything. So our best active player is just injured indefinitely and like was supposed to be ready for contact and then was not ready for contact. But let's just say nothing for a while. Let's provide no information. See what happens. then finally people started asking, hey, do you have information? We would like information. And they gave incorrect information. Then the correct information came out because Kyrie finally got trotted out there. It was like, dude, you got to say something. We have to say something. This is like, welcome to the big boy NBA. When one of your star players gets hurt, you can't say nothing. And then you can't say the wrong thing. What happened is like, I hope they learned a lesson. They were not transparent. After Kyrie spoke, they were like, well, see, we did transparency. We did the good transparency. We're good now. Like, no. Kyrie, this was mishandled. I haven't been in the weeds on it, but I think the people on Twitter who are saying if this was the Knicks and they were on a 7-game losing streak and this happened to one of their star players, the New York Post would have it on the back page. It would be embarrassing and this and that. I think that's true.
Yeah. Shout out to Tommy Beer, who I think was making that point yesterday. And he's right. I mean, everything that happens with the Knicks here, good, bad, otherwise, big, small, all of it's big because it's the Knicks. And with the Nets, yeah, they fly below the radar. I've said this before about the Nets. They're kind of like a small market team in this massive, massive market because there's just not the same amount of attention. There's not the same amount of, obviously, fan support. So they are able to skate on a lot of this stuff or were in the past. And you're right. It changes now when you have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. There are a bunch of things here, and I'm going to try to be quick with it so that I don't go flying off the handle or get too deep in the weeds. But two things happened. Not just this ambiguity or confusion about his injury and what to call it and where in the – is it the shoulder? Is it the thoracic? Whatever. I don't even care about the medical terminology. The bigger problem is they weren't upfront about it. They were not transparent. They did not – have Kyrie speak. There's a rule that an injured player has to speak at least once during the period of time that they're out, if they're out for an extended period. And
I give you credit because you are one of the people who are on top of these rules. I don't internalize them. I don't memorize them. There are rules for this that are only enforced if people like you are like, no, this is a rule.
Yeah. No, and without getting into that too deeply, let's just say that was an issue in all of this. He should have spoken much longer ago. By rule, he should have. He's obligated to. The team and Kyrie Irving chose not to do that. What was the consequence? One, confusion about the injury. Two, a lot of speculation about Kyrie Irving, the person, about all kinds of other things that
it's a great point. He loses.
I'm not going to repeat those things because it's not fair.
And some
of those things that were said or speculated on weren't fair. But some of those things, by the way, were said by other players or former players, including on your network, right? Where they were speculating on whether, when he missed the Celtics game and all this other stuff. I'm not saying it's his fault. What I am saying is that in the absence of information, the void will be filled by other things like speculation and people just idly hypothesizing. And because it's Kyrie Irving and he is a magnet for this kind of stuff anyway, the absence of information about his shoulder led to people talking about all kinds of things that were not about his shoulder. And the Nets and Kyrie could have headed that all off simply by being more upfront with what was going on, giving better updates more frequently, more specifically, and having him make himself available sooner. That's all. It hurt him and hurt the Nets not to do that.
Let me say this. I am also sympathetic to teams and especially coaches in this situation because I know of at least – off the top of my head, I can think of two or three coaches in the last year who have either been told or asked their superiors, can I just not talk about injuries anymore? Because I'm at too grave a risk of misstating something or misstating a timeline or saying something that accidentally puts the player under undue pressure because I give the impression that he's closer to returning than he actually is. Can I just be out of this? I also remember the flashbulb for me was Andrew Bogut. And I don't remember, he had to have ankle surgery, but it turned into a more serious ankle surgery. And the Warriors were kind of accused at one point of fibbing or hiding what turned out. And it was more a case of like, these things are fluid situations. They change. We don't know. Timelines are unpredictable. And like, yeah, at one point we said something that turned out to be wrong because the medical situation evolved. So I'm very sensitive to the fact that, if Kenny Atkinson comes out a month ago and says something, like, there's a real chance that, like, that's a tough position for him. I get it. I just don't know what the solution is. I don't know if it's to bring the head medical person out to talk about it. I don't know, but I know that nothing and maybe the opposite of what was true, whether it was on purpose or not, those things are not solutions.
Yeah. Let me make one final point on this, which is this. for anybody who's thinking like, oh, well, you media guys are trying to get all this information. I don't blame them for not wanting to tell you, blah, blah, blah. It's not about me. It's not about us in the media. Our entire job is to be the conduit to you, the fans. I don't think it's fair to the fans when you treat every injury to every player on your team like it's a freaking national security matter. And the Nets have done that. And look, that's Sean Marks embodying the Spurs culture, right? That's the Spurs treat everything like it's a national security issue. And so that's what the Nets are doing. It's off-putting to me as a member of the media, but also as somebody who just believes that teams should be transparent for the sake of honoring your fans. Your fans want to know, if you're a Nets fan, you want to know, when is Kyrie coming back? If he's not coming back, how serious is this? Is it possible he'll need surgery? Is it possible he's out for the rest of the season? If he's out for the rest of the season, it affects how you, the Nets fan, view whether they should be aggressive at the trade deadline. Are you playing for now? Or are you playing for later? Should you shut him down? Like, these are the discussions fans have that are part of the game of basketball. It's not just about the games that happen. It's talking about my team and what they're doing and what their prospects are and how good they can be. All of these things are baked into it. And so when you shut out the fans and you deny them that information, not only is there all the confusion that we just talked about, but I believe it's disrespectful to those fans because you could be telling them more than there is. And yes, there are HIPAA laws and everything else too. By the way, HIPAA's existed for years and years. Teams used to be more upfront about this consistently. Some of them have become much less transparent. They use HIPAA as a shield for any time they don't want to talk about something. And that to me, yes, both as somebody who follows the game and as a media member, it is irritating to me. And it should be irritating to fans because you shouldn't wake up one day and find out. I'll give the quick example. Quentin Richardson was listed as just sore lower back for like two straight months with the Knicks one year. And then one day it turned out he needed back surgery. Sore lower back, sore lower back, sore lower up, back surgery. No, no, you knew all along it was much more serious. I don't think it's fair to your fans to have led them to believe that maybe he was coming back any day now.
Or maybe they didn't know all along it was much more serious. I wasn't there, but I'm just saying in theory, it's possible that a situation evolves and you can come out and say, like, we don't know. We're not sure. Here's why we're not sure.
That
has to be an acceptable answer.
Absolutely. That is also acceptable because you're right. These things do evolve. They are fluid. And sometimes a small injury grows into a larger one or whatever. But again, just be transparent. Say as much as is reasonable to tell us without violating anybody's privacy and without going out on a limb. It's not that hard.
More broadly, the interesting thing developing in the East is that the Magic are now the 7th seed at 17-20. The Nets are 8th at 16-20. A whole conglomerate of teams, Charlotte, Detroit, Chicago, and the fighting Washington Wizards, who are winning with, I mean, these lineups they're throwing out there are ridiculous. Jordan McRae is averaging like 30 a game in the last three.
It's like the who he play for All-Stars.
Those teams are only four games out of the playoffs. My point is the 2nd seed in the East is going to become one of the most coveted things in the NBA. Because the gap between the 6th seed, which is currently Indiana, and 7 is so huge that the only way to get yourself – like Milwaukee's going to get the number 1 seed. That's out. I mean, Boston's only 3 out in the loss column, but I'd be shocked if Milwaukee's not the 1 seed. So that 2 seed, which is currently Boston, with Miami 1 game behind, Raptors 4 in the loss column, Sixers and Pacers 5 in the loss column, so a ways to go for them. But that 2nd seed is worth chasing. It's worth chasing, and – unless something at the bottom of these shakes up, like there's a huge benefit to getting that seed because A, you get the easy first round opponent, and B, you're out of the Bucks bracket until the conference final. So that race, like these games for Miami, Boston, Philly, like Philly's recent cold spell, like that really matters. Like that seed, like Philly right now is looking at Toronto first round without home court advantage, Milwaukee second round, like. As high as I was on the Sixers before the season, like, you're not getting out of the East if that's your bracket. They are not good enough to – they need to get up to the 2nd seed or get an easier road to get out of the East. Anyway, enough about the East. I'm just going to say my All-Stars.
Okay. Yeah, go.
Brandon Ingram was – there were two guys that ended up being such tough cuts for me that if they make it, they might make my final column depending on what happens in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I went – again, my lock reserves were Jokic / Kawhi. Whoever I don't start, Paul George, Damian Lillard. Here's my remaining four.
Okay.
Chris Paul.
Wow.
Rudy Gobert.
Okay.
Donovan Mitchell.
Okay.
And Karl Anthony Towns. With the two tough omissions, the toughest of all the omissions being Brandon Ingram and Devin Booker. Those were, and if you want to sub both of them in, I still might. But right now, Mitchell Gobert, CP, and Karl Anthony Towns. Let me defend my Karl Anthony Towns pick.
Yeah. I want to hear this.
Cat has only played 23 games. You don't want him. That's fine. I think he's coming back soon. So by the time we get to the point where we're going to have to make these choices, his percentage of games played will look a lot better than it does now. I think he was so singularly spectacular on offense that in this field, I'm cool with him picking him based on how scintillating he was in those 23 games on offense over Ingram. Pelicans are better with Ingram off the floor. I don't necessarily think they're bad either way. They're slightly less bad with Ingram on the bench. I don't really think that matters. But even in those 23 games, his numbers are so ridiculous. And I'm talking the regular numbers, which are 27, 12, 4.5 on 50, 40, 90 shooting almost, 60% on twos. His advanced numbers are better than all these guys. All of them. All of them. So if he comes, I'm assuming he's going to come back and play. And he's like the Siakam of the West to me, which is like, I don't really care how many games you missed. You were so clearly one of the X best players that I'm putting you in a reserve spot. Let's talk about his defense. With Minnesota on the, with Towns on the floor, here are the offensive numbers, ready? Towns on the floor, 114 points per 100 possessions. That's essentially the best in the league. With Towns off the floor, 98, aka they're a G League team. Defense is where the rubber meets the road for him. On the floor, 115 points allowed, so they're actually getting outscored with Towns on the floor. Off the floor, 101. They've been very strong defensively lately with Gorgui Dieng. Gorgui Dieng is pump-faking, driving, dunk. Gorgui's getting real frisky.
He's got to justify that contract.
Real frisky. Towns' defense is still bad. It looked for the first week of the season like he was going to make strides on that end, and the Wolves were the feel-good story of the season, and they were bragging about it and making fun of Kendrick Perkins on social media for sleeping on their playoff chances. Not so loud now, the Wolves' social media account. A little quieter now.
Towns has missed a bunch of games. We should take it easy on the Timberwolves.
My point is the NBA is too hard. Don't crow early.
No, you're right.
It's too hard.
Especially in November, December. Like you should.
It's too hard to win.
Yeah.
Towns' defense is still bad. However, I'm interested in this. Like, remember I said he's the anti-Jokic? So teams shoot 1,000,000% with Jokic at the rim, and yet Denver's defense is way better with him on the floor. Teams are shooting 49% at the rim with Towns as the nearest defender, which is top 10 in the whole league. And yet they're so much worse with him on the floor. The reason they're so much worse with him on the floor is all three-point shooting. Teams are shooting, like, hilariously much better with Towns on the floor from three-point range. Surely part of that is on him and bad point of attack defense on the pick and roll and all of the openings that creates elsewhere. Surely some of that is bad luck. Surely some of that is also bad perimeter defense.
Isn't there also a lot of flukiness with the
– Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's luck.
With
luck.
Point shooting. Yeah.
And so, yes, his defense is bad, but I don't think it's as bad as those on-off numbers indicate, particularly when you look at his rim protection, which has been, by the statistics we have, pretty good. So I think he was so spectacular on offense that I'm putting him in. You have him out. Who is your full roster?
All right, so my full roster without any qualifiers at the moment. But like you, I did still do the two guards, three front court, and then reserves. No, it doesn't really matter. There's enough that fluidity you can mess with it. Lillard, Kawhi, Ingram, Jokic, Paul George. The last two were the tough ones, and Kat and Booker were the tough cuts. I included Donovan Mitchell and Russell Westbrook.
Oh, come on.
I know. It's just barely. And again.
He wasn't even in my top. He was in my next tier of cuts, to be clear. I considered him.
I mean, Westbrook, I think, is continuing to show signs of decline. He hasn't made a positive impact on the Rockets. They're no better now than they were with Chris Paul. And in fact, Chris Paul's having clearly a better season than he is. He's shooting even ghastlier than usual from 3-point range, 23%. His effective field goal percentage, Westbrook, is his lowest since his second year in the NBA. So I hesitate. However, he's added a certain dimension to the Rockets that I think has been helpful at times is the transition game.
Is the dimension of the transition game. I thought the dimension was going to be able to do stuff when three people swarm James Harden at the top of the arc, which is enough. Look, he hasn't been unhelpful. Like his drives to the rim in those situations are helpful. Someone has to do that.
And he's still putting up monster numbers. His usage and his field goal attempts per game, I think, have not even gone down, which is comical considering the team he joined and who he plays next to. But the Rockets are still a really good team. And here's where I just kind of like lean toward, you know what? Fans love watching Russell Westbrook.
This is such a cop out. I'm so disappointed.
Listen, the guy is pure entertainment.
You better put Trae Young in your Eastern Conference All-Stars then.
Well, I probably won't be back on your pod to do that one. So I don't have to go.
I'm not saying Trae Young's a bad choice either, but you just, by that logic, you better put Trae Young on.
It was more of a tiebreaker kind of thing where I just kind of, I decided, If I'm deciding between him or giving Devin Booker finally his first nod or Towns, I went with the guy who is just pure entertainment and is still putting up monster numbers on a team that's top three in the West. I mean, I know the efficiency is bad. It's why I've always knocked Westbrook in the first place. You and I share the same general critique of him over the last several years, including his MVP year. But for purposes of All-Star, and especially All-Star reserves, I'm not quibbling with it. It'll be interesting to see what the coaches do.
There is no statistical case for Russell Westbrook to make the All-Star team.
Raw box score numbers is really it.
It's not, but he doesn't even have that anymore. Devin Booker's raw box score numbers are just as good. Donovan Mitchell's raw box score numbers are just as good. An assist here or there.
And I do have Mitchell in. And I seriously consider Devin Booker, and I think he's deserving.
Russell Westbrook's advanced stats are horrible. All across the, not horrible, but they're way below these other guys. The Rockets are good because of James Harden. That's why the Rockets are good.
Always. Yeah.
In fact, they're bad when James Harden doesn't play and Russell Westbrook does play, which, you know, like I said, I didn't weigh that heavily with AD. I'm not going to weigh that so heavily here, but in the absence of other compelling statistics saying that Russell Westbrook is an all-star, I cannot find a statistical case for Russell Westbrook to make the All-Star team.
I'm going to make another absolutely squishy, terrible case that you're going to just barf over as I make it. There's a certain amount of inertia or just simply like if a guy has been an All-Star for 6, 7, 8 years running, you got to knock him out definitively.
I don't disagree with that. Kevin Pelton talks about that all the time. The track record has to matter. And I'm fine with that. I just don't – I weigh it a little bit less than most people. And to me, I just don't see a statistical case, especially when you think about, like, yes, his numbers are good. What could other – what would Donovan Mitchell do?
Would he put up 24, 8, and 7?
If on every single possession he was wide open because two guys were covering James Harden?
His scoring would be higher. Whether his assists or rebounds would be as high, I don't know.
Well, he's shooting – Mitchell is shooting – 36% on threes.
And Ryan Westbrook shooting 23.
I think he would do pretty well. Another guy that I know would do well in that role because he did it is Chris Paul. And in fact, he was so good at it that teams could not afford to double team James Harden the way they are doing now. Chris Paul is averaging 16.7 assists, 5 rebounds, 47% overall, 37% from three. Advanced stats off the charts. Here's a stat that's not advanced. Chris Paul in the last 5 minutes of close games, 36 of 66 from the floor, plus 57. Chris Paul in the last 3 minutes of close games, 15 of 31 from the floor, plus 11 and 30. Chris Paul has been the best clutch player in the NBA this year, and it is not close. Chris Paul has been one of the best clutch players in the history of the NBA, full stop. Chris Paul's right elbow mid-range jumper is arguably the single best late game shot in the NBA in the last 15 to 20 years. Dirk Nowitzki would probably be the only one, I think, to me that has an argument. Maybe I should say KD too. Almost any KD shot. But that one.
Joe Johnson for like a 3 year span.
Well, Joe, we're talking like it has to have been a buzzer shot for Joe Johnson. If it was not a buzzer shot, it was only so much Joe Johnson time. Chris Paul has been sensational this year. He's been better on offense than Russ, despite the fewer points per game and all that. Defensively, it's not close. He's been the best clutch player in the NBA for a team that does not have a super duper amount of talent and they're five games over 500, he's in. That left Mitchell, Gobert, Booker, Ingram. And I took both Jazz guys. And I shrug. I don't really feel passionately about it. Does it feel right to have two Jazz guys? It doesn't feel great to have two Jazz guys. But,
I thought about that too. Yeah.
But the Pelicans are 12-25 and the Suns are 14-23 and falling fast. And so I just sort of used winning as the tiebreaker. I mean, if you look at Mitchell's numbers and Booker's numbers, they're very similar. Devin Booker is shooting better overall from the field. Defensively, Mitchell is better, and it's not close. So tiebreaker winner goes to Mitchell. Ingram was tough, man, because I will say that part of the reason you have to watch the bad teams, I mean, you got to watch every team, but when someone has a season like Ingram, you have to – only watching can tell you, is this guy playing winning basketball or is this guy putting up numbers on a bad team? Brandon Ingram is playing winning basketball. The way Brandon Ingram is playing on both ends of the floor. Now, defensively, the advanced stats are unkind to him. I think too unkind. I think he's better than they paint him. But he still has progress typical of a young player. He is playing winning basketball. It will translate to a winning team. He's passing really well. He's shooting contested step-back threes. He's super aggressive going to the rim through contact, through bodies, through little corridors you don't think you can get through.
Despite being a toothpick?
This is real.
Yeah.
It's meaningful. And if you want to put him on the All-Star team, I'm not going to argue. I just didn't in this case because I chose the two Jazz guys and Chris Paul over him. I don't feel great about any of those choices. Even Towns you could quibble with. If he makes it, it will be deserved. If Devin Booker makes it, it will be deserved. He scored 30 or more in like nine games in a row. I'm fine with any of those players. To me, after Ingram and Booker, there was another gap. And then it just sort of gets ugly. I was looking at, like, can I make a case for Ja Morant? Can I make a case for CJ McCollum? Can I make a case for LaMarcus Aldridge, who's sort of sneakily coming along lately and decided about 2 weeks ago, hey, you know, threes. That line. Someone tell me what that line is for. Does it mean something? Oh, it's a three? I get three? Maybe I should shoot those. But that's what I went with. Towns, Mitchell, Gobert, Chris Paul, subject to change. And I feel actually, I feel bad for Booker and Ingram, but decent about those choices. You had Booker off as well, right?
I had Booker off, but I wanted to get him on, and
he would be deserving.
Definitely deserving. And listen, I agree with the way you just stated it in the case of, I think it was Mitchell over Booker, whoever over Booker, just that winning being the tiebreaker. I don't agree in general, even though I was just pounding the coaches for doing it this way. The coaches always talk about winning being so important, so I want them to just be consistent with it. I don't think winning should be that big of a consideration for All-Star, not in the same way as MVP. When we talk about MVP and even All-NBA, it's end-of-season award. It's for the full 82 games, and winning matters at that level, and your stats need to be more than just stats. But for an All-Star game, which is only about half the season, and it's an exhibition game, and We don't consider All-Star to be as big of an honor as All-NBA. It's just a whole different set of circumstances. Then you can be a numbers guy. You can be an all-offense, no defense guy. You can be a guy who is just consistently somebody who's a fan favorite, as long as it's warranted also by at least some of the production. So I'm not – like winning is not to me the most definitive, most important consideration. I think it should be weighed in, and I think that, yes, if you have a tough call between player A, player B, I think it's a fine tiebreaker. But I don't think it should be the be-all, end-all. I have no problem with Devin Booker being an all-star despite the Suns being...
No, Booker is averaging 26, 7 assists, 4 rebounds on 51% shooting, 36% from deep, 57% from two. That's outrageous. His advanced numbers are all worse than Mitchell, and I think that's because of defense. They're taking into defense. And I will say... these advanced numbers, including our real plus-minus, paint Devin Booker as one of the very worst defenders in the NBA. And I watched their game last night. I watched the Suns a lot. I watch every team a lot. I don't see it. There's something that either I'm missing or the numbers are warping because I don't see a good defender. I don't maybe even see an average defender. I see someone who's prone to some mistakes off the ball and this and that. But I don't see Trae Young.
Right. He's not trying.
I don't watch him and think that's one of the 10 worst defensive players in the NBA. So either I'm watching wrong or I'm missing some stuff or I don't see it with him. So yes, I considered his defense, as a disadvantage relative to Mitchell, Gobert, and Paul, but I don't think it's as bad as those numbers are painting it to be, and I would have no problem with him making the All-Star team. By the way, also, if you again, tiebreakers, Donovan Mitchell has also been insane in crunch time this year. The Jazz have been the single best crunch time team in the whole league. Bogdanovich has been crazy good in crunch time. You just can't have three Utah All-Stars. That's too much. So, again, tiebreakers. And, you know, the other interesting conversation is, like, you know, Montrezl Harrell is averaging 20 points a game. I just can't take a reserve. But he doesn't have it, you know, there are other guys. I mean, I looked at the full list of guys. I just was like, let me be completist on this. I looked at Gilgeous Alexander, John Morant, CJ McCollum, Wiggins, went down the drain. LaMarcus, DeRozan, no way. The Spurs are so much better when they're on the bench. Porzingis, Murray, Jamal Murray, Buddy Hield, Jaren Jackson. I looked at everybody. It's not
D'Angelo Russell.
He hasn't played enough. Yeah,
I know.
Neither has Fox.
I disqualified him for that. But yeah, no, I looked at a bunch of guys. It's most of the guys you just mentioned.
So to review, my team, starters, Luka, Harden, LeBron, Davis, Jokic/Kawhi, reserves, Jokic/Kawhi, Paul George, Damian Lillard, Karl Anthony Towns, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Chris Paul.
And I went Luka, Harden, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Gobert for the starters. Reserves were Lillard, Westbrook, cringing a little with Westbrook, Kawhi, Ingram, Jokic, Paul George, Donovan Mitchell. All subject to change. And
I feel good about my list.
I will say one other quick thing. You mentioned earlier, fans who are like freaking out about what other fans did, the Caruso votes and everything else. I'll say this. The fans still do a better job of this than the players. And the players get a quarter of this also. So the fan vote is 50%. Players will collectively vote, and that will be 25%. Media collectively votes, a panel of us, and that's 25%. But ever since they went to this format, the player vote has been consistently bizarre with when you start looking at all the guys that got votes and even like multiple votes who are guys who are like 15th men or semi-retired or playing in China and they're still getting votes. Like it's the players are not taking, I hope they take it more seriously this year. So I'm not going to criticize the fans when I see the players doing what they've done.
I want the players to have a vote. I want them to take it seriously. And if they take it seriously, I think they should take some of our share. I think they should have a bigger voice than we do if they take it seriously.
If they took it seriously. And I'm not sure that they do. The one other thing I will say, and going through this is mostly this morning when I was kind of scrolling through a basketball reference pages, I've decided I need dynamic mug shots now. So when I go to the Karl Anthony Towns page and he's smiling brightly, looks really happy, I'm thinking, man, he's missed like 7-8 straight games and his team is losing. Like it should be sad Karl Anthony Towns when I go to his page
time.
Yeah. And like Brandon Ingram is looking really glum and I'm thinking, dude, you're having this phenomenal breakthrough season. Sure, the Pelicans are struggling. I want like dynamic mug shots. I want it to match the mood when I go to a basketball reference page.
I like that, Howard Beck. That's the kind of insight fans want from you. Okay, we have to abandon this studio because Ariel Helwani is going to talk MMA in a couple minutes here. But Mr. Beck, it's always wonderful to see you. I hope you are adjusting to being a couple subway stops away from the Park Slope Food Co-op now. I'm sure they miss your patronage, but we'll have to do this again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.